Before we get started, a quick disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing you hear is an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any investment. With that, hello and welcome to the Range Capital Podcast. I'm Andrew Walker, Portfolio Manager at Rangeley. With me as always, my co-host and Rangeley's founder, Chris DeMuth. Today we're going to start with a CEO change over at GE, and then we're going to move on to some thoughts on M&A or the lack thereof. So Chris, big news this morning, GE fired their longtime CEO, Jeff Immelt. He'd been CEO since September 2001, so, you know, 15, 16 years. They replaced him with a company, with a veteran from the company, John Flannery. He currently runs their healthcare division. He spent much of his career in the GE Financial Services division. He also had a long history with GE and M&A. Shares were up 5% on the news of the new CEOs today. So I'm going to turn it over to you. What do you think of the firing? What do you think of GE going forward?
They wouldn't have called it a firing.
What's that?
They wouldn't have called it a firing.
They did not call it a firing. No,
I would say it was more firing. Of a continuity than discontinuity. If you wanted to make a sharp break, I mean, it was an insider associated with prior GE deals, and an insider in a tradition of GE, which I find to be very indicative of such a huge company. These guys end up being sort of politicians. You know, I was listening to them speak today, and it is just packed with kind of platitudes and jargony catchphrases. You know, you'd make a great drinking game on talking about diversity and stakeholders and so forth. And he sounded just like Jeff Immelt in that, and really was associated with a lot of the things that Immelt did. So I think they have to make some big changes. I rather suspect they will, but you didn't hear a lot about that today.
Yeah, look, I think you start and you kind of look at it. There was a lot of pressure in recent weeks from shareholders on GE. Performance had been pretty poor for years. Under Jeff Immelt's reign, you know, shares have fallen 30% versus 125% climb in the S&P 500. If you kind of factor in dividends, shares are only up about 17% versus 200% plus for the S&P 500, which over the short term, that's a pretty poor bogey. But over 15, 16, 17 years, you know, that's a pretty good bogey, and GE well underperformed. I think if you look at their history, they were caught flat-footed for the financial crisis, the GE Capital. They moved into oil and gas starting in kind of 2012, 13, 14, right before oil prices kind of peaked. Like, I think it's kind of tough to look at Jeff Immelt's history and say, this was going well, which is why I'm surprised you have investor pressure coming. And they say, oh, we'll just go with a company insider who's largely associated with a lot of these mistakes they've made. You know, I'm not saying he's not a good choice, but it seems strange. I can't help but wonder if there are some more shoes to kind of drop here.
I think there will be. I would say even more than flat-footed during the financial crisis. If you look at the GE commercial paper, I think that they could have brought down the company and the whole system. I think only because they were so big. And, I mean, they were the number one issuer of commercial paper at a time when if it seized up, everything could have, I mean, it really could have been the kind of fulcrum disaster in our system. And only because they were so big and irresponsible, it was kind of like a game of chicken that nobody wanted to lose, that they survived. But kind of remarkable to me that Immelt could have gotten a company into that situation and then had a career survive for another decade plus after that, or about a decade after that. So it was precarious, it was risky, and only survived because of general government intervention in the time of the financial crisis.
Yeah, and you know, the quotes in the Wall Street Journal this morning were not great for the company. You know, they said he's had a history of overpromising and underdelivering on earnings. They kept mentioning that he was throwing out this $2 in earnings per share in 2018 targets, and they said it was driving investors crazy. Nobody believed they could do it, and the company and Jeff Immelt were kind of the last people to acknowledge that it wasn't going to happen. And I think that was kind of the last shoe to drop. And look, they're choosing this executive. In reading the background today, it seems he's associated with a lot of the more controversial GE deals in the recent past, specifically buying French Alstom's power division. But at the same time, he's associated with a lot of the deals that kind of were getting GE smaller and splitting off. So you have to look at this, I think, and say, oh, there's probably going to be some split up, some divestitures coming in the near future.
I think this fall. I mean, I think that he did say that he's going to look with urgency. He referred to shareholders more than Immelt tends to in terms of the list of people he concerns himself with. I think that he could end up even, you know, now I was interested to see if they immediately picked a successor to him within GE Healthcare, which they did. I think that if they hadn't, the likelihood that he could break up GE and go back to healthcare could have been more clear. You know, today actually was the day they announced clearing the Baker Hughes deal with GE. But, you know, this kind of deal, it shows the problem being a habitual M&A buyer. You pay these huge series of control premiums, and then you don't tend to get anywhere near that amount when you have the big divestitures associated with the deal. They're divesting water and process technologies with the deal just announced today. And that might have been even connected a little bit with the specific timing. Mm-hmm. Although Immelt really went out of his way to make it seem like this month approximately, this season, was the season they'd been planning for years. I simply just don't believe it.
Yeah. And look, I think it shows the power of the rising power of corporate activists, even at these giant companies that historically would not be targetable, right? Like Trian owns 2 or 2.5% of GE. They start pushing for changes, and eventually it leads to Jeff Immelt getting kind of pushed out, right? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of quotes in the paper today about, this is clearly a lead to GE breaking up, spinning off some divisions. Baker Hughes, which you just mentioned, is a target. Healthcare is a target. And the other quote that really jumped out to me was, there was a quote, Jeff created the Big Apple, now it's time for John to polish it, in terms of GE is going to be undergoing a lot of cost cutting. So I think it just shows the rising power of the corporate activists. And if you're not delivering for your shareholders, their shareholders are going to come in and they're going to force management to kind of step up to the plate.
I think that's absolutely true. And it doesn't require, as you pointed out, actual force. It helps if you're persuasive, if you're right on your case. But if you have an argument to be made and you own 1 or 2%, I feel that there is a broader group of fellow holders that will listen. Yep. That it used to be this very distinct category, but now the big money, the big mutual funds, pension funds, are listening. And if Nelson Peltz has something better to say than Jeff Immelt, Nelson Peltz will get more of what he wants.
And in GE's case, it's a, you know, big mutual funds and index holders are the major holders of GE. So it is interesting that Trian can come in, buy 1 or 2%. They can just go to these big index funds, and if they can convince them and they can convince the corporate governance leaders that, hey, there's a need for a change, it can happen. So the last thing I'll mention, you mentioned Baker Hughes. You know, Baker mm-hmm. Hughes, a big part of that stock will remain publicly traded. The guy who's taking over GE is also the guy who argued for the spinoff of Synchrony Financial. So I think Baker Hughes seems like a natural kind of spin off the remaining stake to shareholders at some point. Okay, perfect. Why don't we turn over to M&A unless you have anything else to add on GE real quick?
No.
Great. So let's turn to M&A. So, you know, I think at the beginning of the year, there was a lot of hope that we'd see this big boom in M&A that would be spurred by Trump, by President Trump's focus on lower regulations, more growth, big tax cuts, big infrastructure spending. And we really haven't seen that play out. U.S. M&A year to date is down about 16%. And global M&A is actually roughly flat. So Europe's really seen a big pickup in M&A, while U.S. has seen a big downdraft. You know, and I wanted to get your thoughts on what's going on here. Is this just a calm before a massive storm of a big M&A in the back half of the year? Or do you think kind of this regulatory uncertainty, tax uncertainty, all these uncertainties are really killing U.S. M&A?
The best thing the Trumpkins had to say about the political environment leading to more M&A was deregulation. Whatever one thinks of the president himself, I believe he has some phenomenal people at the regulatory agency level that will lead to eventually more clarity and more market orientation around sectors that could lead to a lot of rationalization, consolidation. That's the good news. The bad news, which has so far been swamping the good news, is chaos and uncertainty that has been, I would say, bad capitalism and bad socialism. The nice thing about socialism, or kind of big, you know, high tax, high spending, high regulation, you can pass a lot of costs on to customers. You know, mm-hmm. there's a cost to society. It will make us poorer overall, but it actually can be a great environment for producers who can stick the consumers with the bill. The problem is if you don't know. The problem is if you have this weird hodgepodge, it's incoherent to have high spending and low taxes. It is incoherent from a deal perspective to have just unknown. I mean, we can deal as private sector market participants in a lot of different kind of environments, and there are people who've gotten rich in pretty much every type of political system. So I might, and you might, we all have philosophical preferences, which on most days doesn't matter at all what we prefer because nobody's asking us, but we have to react in practical terms to the game that we have to play. But what we can't do is if every time you try to make a move, you don't know what game you're playing. If you say, well, that was a terrible checkers move, even though you thought you were making a chess move. And that's what Trump has left us with. There are certain sectors that are highly sensitized to the commercial tax rate, for example. Bank M&A, you kind of need to know if it's going to be 35 or 15 or 25 or zero to come up with what a realistic price is. And I just don't know how you're supposed to do a deal right in the middle of that massive uncertainty.
No, I think that's 100% correct. And, you know, bank M&A is a great one. Another one I've been looking at is a lot of real estate. A lot of companies have said, hey, we had this real we've built up this big real estate portfolio, and we're going to spin it out into a REIT. But if Donald Trump's going to cut the tax rate to 15%, then it doesn't really make sense to take on the added costs and the hindrances of a REIT. So they're kind of stuck in this weird limbo where they're like, we don't know if we should keep it and kind of operate as is because tax rates are coming down, or if we should spin it off and then we can focus on our core operations. So you're in this very weird space. And, you know, I think the one thing that kills deals, confidence, is uncertainty. Yes. And there's uncertainty around regulations. There's uncertainty around taxes. There's uncertainty around healthcare. So every sector, people are kind of freezing up. And I find it interesting that business CEO confidence are at all-time highs while we're not seeing a lot of M&A. You normally see M&A when there's confidence. We have this massive uncertainty. So it's just this very weird disconnect between all sectors.
Let me touch on the healthcare for a second specifically, and then just a thought about the practicality of M&A processes. Healthcare is a bigger burden in the U.S. than our corporate tax rate. It is more uncertainty, it is more cost from a corporate perspective, and it makes us more different than most other developed nations. And we, again, bad capitalism and bad socialism, we don't have a competently managed national health service, nor do we have free market competition that really allows the insurers and the healthcare providers to viciously go after customers. Where we do, where there are no third-party payers, in I would say LASIK surgery, cosmetic dentistry, we have fantastic markets.
Yep.
We have functional, we have ads, we have people that just slash down prices, and the prices really relate to the quality, and it's very sane. So one can do markets if something really matters. You should have more markets, not less. But we don't have either the benefits of either system, and that hurts M&A too.
I want to say I'm glad you mentioned M&A because that's really, or healthcare, because that's really what spurred this conversation. Mm-hmm. There was a front page article in the It was in the Financial Times talking about how healthcare is the sector that has just been blasted by all of this regulatory uncertainty because look, they have no clue on taxes, which are massively important if you're a very profitable healthcare company. They have no clue on taxes. They have no clue on how many people are going to be insured, how drug pricing is going to be regulated going forward. There's just so much uncertainty, and there's just been almost no deal making in the U.S. in healthcare recently. The only big deals have actually been in the cash pay type markets that you're talking about. And, you know, it just doesn't seem like that's going anywhere away anytime soon. And that's a big, big source of, you know, all the hospitals. It's over 20% of GDP. As long as there's regulatory uncertainty there, M&A there looks very, very unlikely.
M&A has the same practical considerations of dating, too. You can't put something on hold indefinitely. You look at some of the back and forth, especially if you look at background sections on deals that eventually get done or failed deals or partial deals. I think I'm not going to mention the one I'm thinking of in particular, but you look over the past year where deals that would make sense don't get done, and you have one side interested and not the other, and then vice versa. And the more chaos and uncertainty you have in the regulatory environment, the harder it is for coordination because they just don't know and sometimes can think greedily about the potential upside for them, but aren't able to split the difference and move on. And if you don't get the right tempo, you can't necessarily see companies acting in very kind of transitive, rational ways because of all the normal greed and other assorted problems people can have. It tends to get exacerbated when the tempo gets off in deals.
And the other thing is, look, companies are not frozen in time, and making deals takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. And if there's a lot of uncertainty, at some point, a good company just needs to say, hey, forget that. We just need to focus on our go alone plan, and we'll try again in a year or two. But we're losing salespeople. We're not making investments that we should be making because we're kind of thinking about and waiting for this certainty that's not coming to allow us to buy or sell. We've just got to ignore that and move on. So, I think it's about time. Do you want any last thoughts here?
I have nothing to add.
Okay, great. So that's all the time we have for today. Before we hit our disclosures, just a quick reminder. If you like this podcast, and I think there were more of you than we thought, we really appreciate all the messages. Everybody saying, hey, where's the podcast been the past couple of weeks? Chris was just up in Maine and we had a travel schedule. But if you like this podcast, we appreciate it. Send us emails, but really be sure to follow and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, wherever you get this podcast. Chris, I don't think we have any disclosures on any of the stocks you mentioned today.
No.
Great. We'll talk to you guys later this week.